Well, good morning, and I put a lot of time in this week reading the introduction to this book that we're going to be looking at over the next, I think it'll work out about 10 months on Tom's, he's alarmed by it. It's what we it was my idea. So I was talking to one of my Christian pals yesterday. He rang me up over something, and I was telling him about what I've been doing, and he said, "Oh," he said, "you like me?" He said, "You make a suggestion," he said, "you get landed with it." So I said, "Well, you could put it that way." But we were going. You remember, if you can remember, pre-pandemic, we used to have a Wednesday evening prayer and Bible study, which was always a good time. And I get all sorts of stuff through from various Christian organisations and what have you. And one of the organisations that I get from is the Good Book Company, and we've used them for a few things. And this book came through on the as an email, and one of those emails where you could look at parts of it electronically. And I looked at it and I thought that would be ideal for Wednesday evening. So I had a word with our treasurer and Brother Clive, and we agreed that it would be a good study for us. And then the next thing was that the pandemic came, and so we stopped meeting. We were not allowed to meet. So I've had these sitting in a drawer for probably best part of 3 years, I suppose. But I must confess that having spent quite a bit of time this week on the introduction to it, I've been blessed, very blessed in actual fact. I've been thrilled that I'm in a position I'm in as a believing Christian. And, you know, what it's done to me this week is to make me realise that what people who sort of dip in and out of church, what they miss. I've been very fortunate in that over the years that I've been involved with regular work, regular attendance in good churches, good Bible-based churches, brethren-based churches. And whilst, you know, these, we don't want to be sort of, we're not here to start saying one church is better than another, but, you know, I've been around a long time, and it's, as I speak with Christians over the years, as I've spoken with Christians over the years, the general feeling is no matter where they come from, they would always admit that if you've been brought up in a brethren, you've had a good sound upbringing in the scriptures. And I thank God for that. And so it's I've been given the task of seeing this thing through. So we're going to meet on a Sunday morning, on the first Sunday of the month, when we'll have our communion. And then what we're going to do, we're going to go, as of next week, next month rather, chapter one, and then through. And there are eight chapters that we're going to be looking at. So I've got a lot of stuff that I've brought with me. I probably won't get through it all. But what I plan to do is, I've got all your email, those of you who are on email. If there's anyone who's not on email, let me know and I'll print a copy for you. And I'll send out what I've got in front of me here, and you can have a read through it at your leisure. And then you'll know where we're coming from. When we start on chapter one next month, which will I'll take the lead on that one, and then we'll see where we go from there. I hope I'm not going to do, well, I don't mind, but I think from your point of view, it'd be nice to have some other input on it, but it's something, it's an ongoing project, put it that way, and we trust that we're going to be blessed from it. Well, to start with, I wanted to read what really is in the back of the mind of the American pastor who has written this book. And it's in Acts 2 and verses 42 to 47. And they're wonderful verses. They're verses that we often refer to. We sometimes read them before we have communion. And it's headed the Fellowship of the Believers. And it's Luke writing the Acts of the Apostles says they devoted themselves, this is the believing Christians, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. Selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone who had need, as he had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And what was the result? And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Wonderful words, words that, as I was reading them again, reminding myself this week, I was just saying to myself and to the Lord that that was the case these days. And sadly, it's not. But you can see that they had this great love for each other. They'd come to know the Lord through the teaching of the apostles, and they were enjoying fellowship together. They would enjoyed taking communion, as we call it, and they were there at the prayer meeting. And you know, it's got to be said, not just that in our own chapel, but churches really the world over, but certainly the country over. I can only speak for this country, but you know, prayer meeting is probably the least attended meeting during the week. People will come to other things, but when it comes to prayer, it's those who are totally dedicated to Christian things. And yet, you know, the amazing thing is that prayer is indeed the powerhouse, the one thing that we need to use. And so can I ask you to, when you go home, during the week, during the month, to read this portion and let it really sort of enter into your very being, as it were, and so that we can have this at the back of our minds, because this is what loving the church is all about, loving our church, and so it is. So I'll very quickly give you what I have gleaned from my reading this week about this. So it's based on the scripture that we just read. The author is a gentleman called Tony Marida. He's a pastor of an evangelical church in North Virginia, USA. It was written in 2021, so I must have got my facts wrong though when I read that again, because in actual fact, the pandemic was what, 2019, wasn't it? No, anyway, we put it that way. They've been in my drawer for one of our drawers at home for a long time, and we've not used them. And it's written to the Christian community at large, he says. And in the front, and this is, I've read many books over the years, very often, you know, you get one or two people who recommend that we read this book because it's good. There are 18 people who've written in this book, and every one of them is a really strong recommendation that we should read it. But one of my favourite Bible teachers is a man named Alistair Begg. It was my privilege and joy to listen to him over Zoom or whatever at the convention, the Keswick Convention last year in July. And he says, this book reminds me why it was that long before I became a pastor, I was thrilled to be part of a local church. I commend it enthusiastically and hope that each member of my church will read, mark, inwardly digest, and live out the lessons learned. Alistair is the senior minister of Parkside Church, Chagrin Falls, Ohio. And he's a Christian writer too. And so I just picked him out as being, but they're all, you read them, you get the, I'll make sure I get copies round. I just want to make sure that I've got a spare one that, for in case there's anybody else who's going to tackle a chapter. So there are important statements to be considered. And he brings these out in his introduction. The local church is a family. And I know that in families that we don't always see eye to eye, but generally speaking, particularly in Christian families, we do our best to get on with one another. You know, I remember somebody saying to me as a young man, we had a person who joined our assembly in Liverpool, and it was a very homely, small assembly, something like the size of the chapel. And this person was well known in Liverpool, and he came in and he started to change things, told us that we were not doing things right. I was only a teenage lad, but he told our elders that they were not doing things right and they had to do this, that and the other. And it almost split the church. And you do get people around like this who really get on. But he didn't stay for too long, thankfully, and he moved on to upset another church. And but there we are. And I remember one of the lovely Christian brothers that it was my privilege to grow up with. He said, these people, he said, they're like fleas. He said, they come and he said, they land on you and they itch and they make you really upset. But he said, they do go. And, you know, I don't think we've got anybody in our chapel like that. I'm not aware of them, put it that way. So we are a family. And the contemporary church is doing a rethink. It's realizing that it's prioritized self-satisfaction over selfless commitment to the purposes of Christ. There have been lots of changes in churches, haven't there, over these past few years. And many of them are not for the better. And so the thing is that what Tony is saying is that the key word to all of this is commitment. And, you know, you probably, like me, you're well aware of that. You don't need to read this book to be aware of the fact that we need commitment. That's what Christianity and our running our churches is all about. Commitment to the Lord and to the work of the Lord, and seeking his guidance in these things. And then he goes on to say that we need to be belonging. And he says that belonging is a great privilege and a responsibility. Loving our church, and I don't know whether we're all aware of this, whether we thought of it, but it hit me when I read it. Loving our church will have eternal value. And, you know, I think if we all realise that, I think there might be a few more people here this morning. I don't want to stand here in any judgment. Please don't take it that I am. But obviously you, like me, must be wonder at times why we don't see people on a more regular basis. Well, hopefully, by the time we've come to the end of chapter 8 of this book, maybe things will change. That's the whole point of us going to do it. So the church is God's family. You don't need me to tell you that, nor Tony. And the church is in crisis throughout most of the Western world, he says. A misunderstanding of the true nature of the church. It's time for us to recapture the New Testament's vision, which we've just read together, of Christ's church. We need to fall back in love with Christ and his church. And that's a comment by a director of church planting, again in America, a Dr. Winfield Bevins. And he says that, remember, this is another key word. So we've got commitment, belonging, and remembrance. Remember, Jesus is Lord of and over the church. Therefore, we should want to serve it responsibly, joyfully, and wholeheartedly. You know, it really is hard hitting this. And as I say, it's hit me hard this last week. But I've thoroughly enjoyed what I've been doing. So it's a book full of very practical and easily implementable next steps. And as I say, I've just read Alistair Begg's recommendation for it. So then we come to the author's foreword. And a foreword is where the author tries to tell us what's in his mind or her mind when they've written this book. And so Tony says that, reminds us that Jesus came into this world to start a new kind of community for which he gave his very lifeblood, and it's set apart by beauty, his own beauty. Churches should be beautiful places, should be welcoming places, so that when you step over the threshold, that front door, you should feel a lovely feeling. I'm thankful that I've heard people say to me about our home that there's a lovely atmosphere. It's good. You know, you go in some places, don't you, and you can feel an atmosphere that you're not very happy with. And our chapel, I hope, is indeed a place where that happens. We run the friendship group on every other Friday. And the folk come regularly because they enjoy, and they say there's a good feeling in this building. So let's make it even better if we can. And what he's done, he's used the Beatitudes. We'll see that he's used the Beatitude as our ground rules. And blessed are the peacemakers and so on. What he says is he's looked into this word, and he puts the emphasis on the meaning congratulations. So we can congratulate ourselves if we are doing what the Lord gave in the Sermon on the Mount when he gave the Beatitudes. The poor in spirit, well, someone who's poor in spirit hasn't got much to offer. But, you know, strangely, he rejoices over that, over us, and he welcomes us and enriches us as heirs of his kingdom. Jesus builds his new kind of community with sinners so bad that they can offer nothing to God. And how true that is, that we can't bring anything to God. I was on a Saturday evening, I watch a program that is from, it's Real Lives, it's called, and it's sent to me from one of my evangelical friends from Yorkshire. And they run this, and they do. He does an interview every Saturday evening. If anybody is interested, I'd be very happy to send it across. And last evening, there was a young lady who was on there, who was, she was supposed to be aborted as a baby, and her mother was, who had HIV. Her mother obviously was not a terribly good person, and she was talked out of it by a Christian lady. And so this young lady grew up and she lived a bad life. She was in on drugs and the usual things that we hear. But you know, God had a plan for her, and it was wonderful to see what he's done. He brought her from literally the gutter almost, and he today she is working in a Christian community up in Edinburgh for people who are homeless, druggies and the like, a bit like Dave, who was here a couple of weeks ago. And this is the thing that God can do, isn't it? He can change us. And so, you know, some of us have perhaps had a better upbringing than that. But, you know, when it comes to it, as we've been reminded this morning, at the end of the day, we're all sinners in God's sight. But, you know, God's grace is greater than all that. And we've been brought into his kingdom. So, he says, congratulations, you stand to inherit everything worth ever having forever. We bring our needs. He provides everything, as I say, through grace. And then there's a table of contents, which I'm going to put up, we're going to have on there, what the chapters are that we're going to be looking at. It's undenominational, and each chapter concludes with action steps. In other words, putting practice theory into practice. So I'm hoping that, you know, we're all really going to benefit from studying this book, and that our Christian lives are going to take on new meaning. That's my prayer for us as a church this morning. So are we prepared to take the challenge? And we can only do it by God's grace. So, as I say, I will send these notes out because I realise that I'm not going to be, go take them all. But you can all have a copy and you can read them. So the book will help us to see our church with new eyes of expectancy and love for our church, with new gladness of heart. Instead of finding fault with things, we'll marvel at the privilege of belonging to a church where Jesus is present. I was a bit bowled over when I read that comment. And there we are. So he says that we are part of the greatest reality on the face of the earth today, the community where Jesus himself lives. And he quotes from Francis Schaeffer. Many of us have probably read one or two of Francis Schaeffer's books. And Francis Schaeffer said, "The church at the end of the 20th century If the church is what it should be, young people will be there, but they will not just be there, quote, they will be there with the blowing of horns and clashing of high-sounding cymbals, and they will come dancing with flowers in their hair. Now, it's a bit flowery sort of description, but we see, you know what he's getting at. In other words, we'd have young people who want to be here and who want to learn about the Lord and who want to be involved in a church. And that's what we've been praying about for a long time. Maybe God's going to use this as a help to us. And he goes on to say, and all people will come too, and our cities will begin to sense that Jesus himself has come to town. And I was thinking of I would have loved to have been living in Kent when Billy Graham came in 1953, was it? Or 1950s, anyway. And he did the Haringey mission. Apparently, the meeting was supposed to finish at, I don't know, 9 o'clock, say. Apparently, they could hardly stop the thing. Everybody was just over the moon, overjoyed with what they were hearing. Thousands were coming to know the Lord. And apparently, when you went on the underground where people were going away, they were there singing hymns. What a wonderful time that must have been. Now, I don't know that we'll be necessarily doing that, going down to the green or whatever, on a Sunday morning after we've finished here. But, you know, these things, if we really get to grips with it, then that's what it's going to be about. So, his agenda, I'm going to leave that for you to read because time has gone. But Donald, could you put up the one with the key responsibilities of the church believers? That's the one. And I hope you can all read from that. I'm not an expert when it comes to producing these things using that program. But we see the first chapter, which we're going to look at next month, is the importance of belonging. And then we look at why and how to practice hospitality. And then the importance of our worship services. Caring for one another, chapter 4. Serving one another. Honouring leaders and members. You know, as leaders of the chapel. It's not like a hierarchy. We're servants, obviously, for the members, and the members in the same way as we should honour all the members, so the members should honour the leadership at the chapel. And then witnessing, and then the last one is sending. Now, I don't know whether as a result of this we'll be sending somebody out to Africa or whatever, but, you know, it's, in other words, we'll all be hopefully fired up and we will be ready to do what the Lord wants us to do. And I'm looking forward to coming on a Sunday morning and seeing that you know, you're looking for a seat rather than, you know, looking at empty seats. And that's really what's at the back of this. So I'm going to leave it there. And I've given you, I hope, a good introduction to it so that you can see that there's a lot in this little book and we're hopefully going to really benefit from it. So thank you for your attendance, your attention. And as I say, I've got all your, I think you're all on email. If we haven't got your email and you are, let's know. And I'll see that this week I send these out to you and you can... at your leisure, you can follow it through. Thank you. All right, Tom.